So, thanks, guys. I wouldn't start without introducing my colleague and very illustrious colleague, I should say, Eleanor Fleming. So, thanks to her for giving me the chance to be the one doing this talk today. But it's our work together, and you can see from the title, I think kudos to the organizers for kind of lining us up, because our colleagues from Alabama have kind of touched a little bit on the problem, so that has saved me 2 minutes, and hopefully we can have that for questions. So that's our title. It's really about taking the analysis of prediabetes prevalence to another step, or adding another layer. And so you've heard about the background on prediabetes. I'm not going to talk any more about this, but to show you that we just have a table there in terms of blood tests and what prediabetes is. But you've heard all about that. And our colleagues from Alabama, again, thank you, because you have touched on this. And this is kind of the backbone of the problem we are trying to address, which is the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey that we all know as NHANES. Is the only population level study that we have that has based estimates of prediabetes on blood samples, right? And but this, the problem with this is that it is a national, you know, survey, so we kind of start talking about geographic jurisdictions. We at the states don't have the luxury to draw blood on all of our BRFSS respondents to measure, you know, blood glucose levels. So as you've heard from Alabama already, you know, the BRFSS is telling us that the prevalence is somewhere 7 to 15%, depending on what state you are and what population kind of responds to your BRFSS survey. So, you know, I was being conservative here, talking about over 75% of people. Again, our colleagues from Alabama showed you it's up to, you know, 9 out of 10 people with prediabetes don't know it. So there is a gap, and the focus of our paper was really to see how we can bridge that gap at a state level, because we know these people reporting through BRFSS, and we know that a bunch of the population has prediabetes but doesn't know about it, and how can we look to address that problem. Okay, that just went back. Let's go forward. So we try to add a risk assessment layer and say, you know, we know of those who have self-reported prediabetes, but amongst those who did, you know, didn't know or didn't tell us that they have prediabetes on self-response, if we could do a risk assessment as if they were sitting right here and we were asking them a bunch of questions about prediabetes, could we get a better estimate of the total population with prediabetes? And so we'll talk about the risk assessment tool. Again, an extension of what our colleagues from Alabama showed, but this is the whole structure with respect to risk of prediabetes and the BRFSS. So if you see here, this is what BRFSS captures. So if you're looking in just terms of pure numbers, there's about 9,000 people that tell you, out of 10,000, that tell you they don't have prediabetes, but that is a huge chunk of the population, and basically this is where BRFSS stops. And so all we can say is, oh, we know that this 915 people told us they have prediabetes, and there is a huge chunk of these people who probably have prediabetes but don't know it. So we decided to go the extra step and using a risk assessment and say, if we added a risk assessment, the Diabetes Prevention Recognition Program screening test at this level, can we better quantify what proportion of these 9,000 people may have prediabetes? And that would give you kind of a categorization that we'll talk about really briefly. And then, because a screening test has characteristics, right? Sensitivity, specificity, positive predictive value, negative predictive value, we can actually predict what proportion of those who screen as high risk or low risk would actually have a blood test. That is positive. So this is the DPR pre-screening test, and what you see is interesting is that it has 7 questions, and those questions are scored based on your response. But what we thought was going to be a shortcoming didn't end up being so, because if you know BRFSS really well, we can get answers of BRFSS from BRFSS for these four questions. But the first three we really don't have from BRFSS. But if you look at the scoring of one, these three questions would not result in a misclassification, because the score of 9 or more is high risk. So if you do your math and you say, imagine that someone had yes answers to all these three questions, that would be a 3, and had just one answer here, that would be a 5. 5 plus 3 is 8. They're still going to be classified as low risk. And if someone was already high risk by virtue of these four questions and they had a score of, say, 10, they're already high risk. It is really irrelevant whether they had the three other questions. So that ended up being a good thing. And so we had the positive predictive value of the test showed right here 27 to 50% to predict kind of amongst those who are high risk what the score would be. And so this is what we end up with, and this is the basis of what we are saying, is that if you use just BRFSS, this is what you're saying prevalence is. If you add the screening test and you're conservative, you're adding 11.6% to 21.27% of the people, and combined overall, we see that these estimates begin to, you know, mirror a little bit what we've seen in NHANES. A bunch of limitations, screening test characteristics, you know, no lab results and all that, and we need to validate this method with NHANES. But it is also very important information and helpful information for the state to have an extra layer to go through in prediabetes prevalence. So that's all we have. Thank you.